Focus on progress over perfection, because you'll get there someday, but you have to really learn to love the training, journey, and process. And if you're not supported by other people who are just as encouraged, you will run out of steam. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Honest to Dog Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Foley, CEO and head dog trainer at the Doghouse.
And I'm Jeff Gadway with you again this week. What are we talking about this week, Liz?
We're talking about the importance of having a village.
The one about building a village. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great topic. I think it's something that applies clearly to training your dog and getting follow through on the training that you're putting in. But it also applies more broadly than that, just even to being successful in life too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So when you say building a village to train your dog, what do you mean by that? Like, you know, we've heard like it takes a village to raise a kid, or it takes a village. Like, how does that apply to dog training?
Everyone who interacts with your dog is playing an integral role in their behaviors that are going to be set for their entire lives. So if your dog meets somebody and jumps up and they pet your dog, they've just reinforced jumping up. And maybe that's a behavior you're trying to correct out of your dog. Mm. So you need people around you who are going to be supportive of your goals with your dog and be a part of that training in a positive way.
It's interesting. It makes sense now, because I've heard you say before in your group classes or in private trainings that every interaction that you're having is either reinforcing or detracting from your training. You're either reinforcing a good behavior or reinforcing a bad behavior. And so it only makes sense then that every single person who interacts with your dog, whether it's intentional or not, is either building up a good behavior or building up a bad behavior.
Absolutely.
I imagine you probably see this frequently with your training clients, where, you know, maybe one client in the family is really bought into the training and is doing a lot of the work, and hopefully everybody is on board and playing a role. But how does that actually truly come to life? You've probably seen a whole bunch of different situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, whether it's a husband and wife or an entire family, really everybody needs to be on board and in agreement in how they're going to raise the dog. It was my first time running online group class. I was working with a woman and she was like, oh no, my husband's not a part of the training. It's just going to be me with the dog. Yeah. And I was like, okay, cool.
But does the partner live with the dog?
Yeah.
Does the partner, like,
I know,
maybe so, walk the dog sometimes or let it out?
Not at that point. Okay. This was her dog. And so I said to her, if that's the case, then he is not allowed to have the fun stuff with your dog either. If he's not actively participating in the training, he can't sabotage it. Mm. So the way that I see it is, if one person's putting in all the deposits, the other person can't take withdrawals.
Yes.
Like, withdrawals are the affection, the play, the cuddles. The deposits are things like walks and structure and putting in all the hard work. She told him that, and he quickly got on board with the training.
Because he wanted to do the fun stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's kind of shifting the perception that the fun stuff is the outcome. It's not the primary reason that you get it. Well, I mean, you know, you want the companionship of a dog, but first you need to pay your dues before you're able to reap those benefits.
Yeah, well, it's like any relationship, right? There's a drawing, I've seen it, showing on a graph like an unhealthy relationship.
Okay.
And what it is one person is stretched all the way over to meet the other person, whereas what it should be is both people meet in the middle.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I mean,
when we're just taking from a dog, we're not meeting them halfway. We're expecting so much more than what we're giving.
Or it's give and take, right? Like any good partnership, there are going to be days where one partner is maybe feeling low, and so the other partner's got to stretch a little bit over the center line. But to your point, consistently stretching, having one person do all of the work, putting all of the deposits in, mm-hmm. Just isn't going to be sustainable. So when you think about a village, though, it goes beyond the immediate family, right?
Yeah.
So talk about who all is part of that village that's helping to shape a well-trained dog.
Anyone who comes into your home, so family, friends, your dog walker, who you take your dog to for daycare, if that's a thing, people on the street, whether they stop and say hi to your dog or keep on walking, they're all playing a role in how your dog sees and understands society.
Yeah. What makes a village are people who share a certain set of beliefs, values, commitments. And so, you know, even though these people might not be playing a super active role in training your dog, even just being in your dog's orbit requires mm-hmm. them to be on board with your approach and philosophy and methodology.
1,000%. Take, for example, the very simple ask that I tell everybody to practice, which is no touch, no talk, no eye contact when meeting a dog. Everybody who meets your dog should subscribe to that. And so that might mean texting somebody before they come over. Hey, just a reminder, my trainer says this is the new normal going forward. We have to ignore the dog until she's fully calm. And if they say, no, I'm not cool with that, then they're going to sabotage your training. Right? Yeah. Or if you don't tell them at all, they'll unknowingly sabotage your training.
Now, when you tell clients this during your training, what is the general response you get? Because I remember, and I'm just going to be totally vulnerable and honest here, when we started trying to implement some of those rules with our dogs in our household before having family over and, you know, saying to them, okay, what I really need you to do when you come is, you know, don't look at the dog, don't talk to the dog, don't touch the dog. That can be really hard for people to ask.
It's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. So what's the general response you get from clients when you first introduce this concept and they're trying to put it into practice with their villages?
Yeah, they're kind of like, oh God, this isn't going to work. They don't want to have to be the one to communicate it. Or two, they're like, yeah, there's definitely just going to be people in my life that don't practice that. And so in that case, you have options still. You can keep the dog in their kennel until the dog is calm away from them before bringing them towards. Mm-hmm. I always tell my clients, throw me under the bus. Say I'm the big scary bad trainer. No, I'm not. But you paid big bucks to learn this stuff so they can't mess it up. And I've given them stickers to put on their front doors. Like, again, people are visual and they do want the information. So like, don't just tell them what not to do. Tell them why. Why this is important. I'm careful with my verbiage. Like, I wouldn't tell somebody, you have to do this. It's help me help my dog, right? Help me train my dog and do this.
This is how you can help. This is how you can participate in my dog's training, or this is what I need from you. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing too. If you tell somebody, don't do this, they're probably going to want to do it maybe more.
Right. So Liz, why do you think it's so hard for people to communicate what their needs are when it comes to their dog and get their village on board with the training and the mentality and the philosophy, especially around behavior-based training relative to more traditional obedience training?
It's not as widely known and understood and accepted.
And so it's feared, probably.
Yeah. We don't like what we don't know. And for someone to come in and be like, hey, especially because like, everybody loves dogs. And everybody wants to love dogs and how they want to love dogs. And so when you tell somebody, hey, that's actually not healthy for the dog, and it would be better if you practice this, they might feel attacked, for one.
Right.
They might, how dare you tell me how to love a dog? But that fear of the unknown, it being outside of this social norm, probably within your own village, they'll reject what they don't understand. And they'll want you to go back to your old ways.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it goes further than that. Like, you've studied, you know, a number of, you know, leadership experts and human psychology around this and how we're programmed to be avert to change. You've shared with me some really cool stuff from Kerwin Ray on this topic.
Mm-hmm. We're wired to be social. We want to be accepted. Right? And that's in us innately since from when we were born, where if a baby isn't held for an appropriate amount of time daily, that baby could die. Right? And so it's part of our survival. We want to be a part of a pack. We want to be accepted. That acceptance helps us live longer and be stronger. And if we feel that we might be losing our pack, that scares us. That sense of security is then gone. If it's threatened, we will resort back typically to the way that our herd wants us to be, unless we step so far out of that we then develop our own herd.
I think as this applies to dog training, as we start practicing some of these behavior-based techniques and maybe come into contact with people that we've walked our dogs with in the past or friends or family members who don't understand these things, you know, they're going to maybe criticize our new ways, right? If we're trying to practice calm, you know, I know even family of mine, they'll kind of like unknowingly belittle the training. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm not supposed to talk to you, or oh, like, mm-hmm. you know, like, yeah. and whether the intended outcome is to get their way to show affection or, you know, challenge
your belief,
our beliefs. If you don't stay resilient, you could regress, mm-hmm. right?
So you almost need your support, like your herd there as your support group.
That's right.
Like, yeah, my family didn't really get it either. This helped though when I did this, or I stopped bringing my dogs around those people. Yeah, to have that other people who are in agreement with you to help you on those challenging days with yeah. challenging people.
Yeah, I think that's why it's so important to seek out people who maybe they're not at the same stage of training as you or experiencing the same issues, but share the same fundamental beliefs and philosophies around how you're training your dog and approaching your relationship with your dog, and use those people to help you stay strong, right? And also help you overcome some of the challenges you might be facing along the way.
And stay accountable.
Stay accountable, right? Yeah.
Responsible for your goal. Hey, remember when you're about to be like, I don't know if it's all worth it. They're like, hey, remember your goal was to have off-leash freedom with your dog? Keep working towards that.
Yeah.
I see you've improved here and here. Like a huge part of my job, and it's really cool. Right now I'm doing an online course, right, with 11 dogs, and they're humans, and they all get the same homework each week, and they have to upload it to the Facebook page that we're all sharing our content on, and I give feedback. And the amount of times the other students in the class are clapping for them and cheering them on and be like, hey, I've been there. The first time I used the crate, she whined a little bit too. Stick with it. Or they'll see a new walk video and be like, oh my gosh, this is so incredible to see that Lucy's progressed this far on your walk. Keep it up. That's the motivation I think people need when it comes to training. A huge part of my job is to remind them that perfection doesn't exist. There is no such thing as the perfect dog. We joke that Carmen was perfect, but we even know Carmen had flaws, but we love that about her.
Right.
But the whole thing is when you're training, have goals. Goals are great for working towards, but also celebrate the small wins. Like we talked about, the little stuff, even on our last episode, focus on progress over perfection, because you'll get there someday, but you have to really learn to love the training journey and process. And if you're not supported by other people who are just as encouraged, you will run out of steam, I think.
So what are some of the qualities of a good herd that are going to help you move forward and continue making progress? I mean, a couple of the things I just heard, even what you just said, positivity, mm-hmm. people who are going to be optimistic and like positive.
Cheerleaders.
Yeah, cheerleaders, as opposed to, you know, and I've seen this, and I think I've self-selected out of these herds, but there was a dog training group on Facebook that was local to us. And I was like, oh, you know, like we should be in it. So joined.
Very critical.
It was very critical. And I felt like it was closed-minded, kind of being very judgmental of different dog training strategies, very entrenched in one specific way of thinking, mm-hmm. and not positive and uplifting and supportive. Mm-hmm. And so I think that positivity and that light is very important. Any other qualities or characteristics you can think of?
A group that's willing to evolve and grow. I want to be a part of not only friendships, but communities that understand the only way we get better is if we continue to improve ourselves and get better. So yeah. Like a lot of the trainers that I keep in my circle, they are always investing in themselves for more professional development and growing their business and doing just that, evolving. And so the sharing of ideas then and being open is accepted.
Yeah.
It's not challenged.
Something that's kind of connected to those two topics of growth, but also positivity, is being supportive, but not necessarily yes people.
Yeah,
not coddling. One of the things I love about your doghouse training community and even this smaller community of online group training participants right now is that they're willing to offer constructive feedback framed in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody's experiencing a problem, they're like, hey, I've been there myself. Try this, right? Or here's what I see in this video that you've shared. Maybe this is contributing to the problem. So it's positive, but it's not a group of yes people.
Yeah. It's like coaching.
Coaching. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Support, coaching. It's not just yes, yes, yes. It's also not, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. Because mm-hmm. I have been in communities with that, where if somebody was open and honest and vulnerable and put something out there as an idea, it was just ripped apart.
Yeah.
And I left that group too. I was like, I'm trying to grow, but anything I put out there is getting ripped to shreds. And now I'm uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to remove myself from this.
This is all kind of, you know, coming together around this theme of, and we've talked about this. They say that the first thing that you put into your brain in the morning is going to set the tone for the day. If the first thing you do is grab your phone and start scrolling through social media and you're seeing stories of doom and gloom, it's going to set the tone for the day. Whereas if you start by doing affirmations or you start by doing meditation, it's going to set a very different tone for the day. So this idea of being selective with your village and selective with your herd is going to shape the temperament of your training and the attitude mm-hmm. that you're training your dog in, let alone providing you with really tactical, tangible resources to be successful.
Yeah. I have often thought of myself as the black sheep within my own family. And we talked about how starting out the doghouse was straying from the norm of what was accepted in my family, which was go to school, go to more school, maybe do more school, get a fancy job. And the fancy job did not include dog trainer. And so when I was like, no, I'm not finishing this degree and I'm going to open the doghouse instead, that was stepping out. A few years back when I started meditating, I guess it was after I trained with Caesar, and at Caesar Milan's, they give you that little warning even there where now you've learned a lot about energy and now you're kind of enlightened. And when you come home, people might not like how calm you are or how observant you are of energies and your awareness and whatever. And so just be mindful of that. You can't force other people to change. So just know that that might be how they perceive you.
It went further than that though.
Yeah, it did.
I was kind of scared. The first time you came back from Caesar and you told me this, I was like, oh my gosh, is Liz going to not be the person that I knew her as before? Mm-hmm. Right. And the fact that you came home and, you know, maybe they were being a little dramatic, right? But the fact that you were warned that oftentimes people come back from training Caesar's way and their relationships falter because they're on, you know, different pages now. I was like, oh my gosh, like what is going to happen?
Yeah. I didn't join a cult. No.
Right. But it is interesting, like even bringing it much closer to home around embodying a lot of these new behavior-based dog training techniques, being aware of energy, being aware of dog psychology principles. Some people might not be down with that, might not be open to it. And those people, you know, may or may not be able to play a role in your dog's training and life going forward.
Mm-hmm. So with me, I distinctly remember this. I was sharing a hotel room with my mom and my sister, and it was like a ski vacation a couple of years ago. And I got up in the morning and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do my little meditation. My family made fun of me. My mom and my sister were rolling their eyes, making so much fun of me for meditating. And I was just like, I'm going to do me and I'm going to meditate and whatever. Fast forward to now, my mom and my sister are taking a university course on mindfulness and meditation.
No way.
And I was just like, excuse me? I didn't rub it in their face or anything like that, but maybe sometimes it just takes your herd longer to catch up to your growth.
Right.
You don't have to drop people because they don't have the same fundamental ideas and values and philosophies that you do or training approach. But you can say, I respect what you're doing with your right. dog or with your life. And I'm happy that that worked for you. This is what I have to do with my dog because every dog is different.
Yeah.
Maybe when that person adopts another dog and they have it more challenging, they go, okay, now I need your help.
Right.
Right. And now we can be in the same herd again.
At the same time, though, I also think it's totally okay that if people who are in your orbit aren't on board with your training, you don't have to let them interact with your dog the way they want to interact with mm-hmm. your dog. You are your dog's advocate. And if you're trying to do a very specific set of things with your dog, focus on calm, focus on control, like all of those things, if they're not willing to sign up for that, then guess what? They're not able to draw from that bank account of affection and participating. It's not like, oh, okay, well, you know, while they're here, they get to do stuff with my dog the way they want to do it. And then once they go, it goes back to the way, I mean, you can try that, but it's going to undo a lot of the work that you've done, right? And like, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while and you've been focusing on the small stuff, you've been focusing on energy, you've been putting in all of this work, why would you waste it by taking your dog to another village where they follow a whole different set of rules and norms and values?
Everyone's on harnesses, on extended leashes, not respecting each other's space.
So what are some strategies, if let's say you're trying to get people bought into your village's principles, guidelines, values, what are some strategies or phrases or tools that people can use to communicate and educate and get people on board?
One, send them to this podcast, have them listen. I'm always telling clients to let people know before they get to your house or anything like that, how to interact with your dog. So I send them, here's an infographic, send them to your friends and family. They also get a sticker for their front door that says, my dog is in training, please practice no touch, no talk, no eye contact. Make your expectations really, really clear for somebody. And it's not an, I'm not really asking, I'm telling you.
Right.
I need you to do this. And if you tell me that you can't live up to those expectations, then I can make a choice with my own dog and I can keep my dog in another room, or I could go meet you for coffee and we don't even have to come into my house, or I keep my dog on leash so that my dog can approach you. There are ways to work around those situations.
Yeah. And I think, let's take my family, for example. My dad was kind of notorious for nurturing some of the wrong behaviors with our dog. And so you'd said to me on more than one occasion, hey, I really need your help with making sure your dad is on board with the training. And so even within your family or within your partnership, asking for help there, right? And so you would say that to me and I'd be like, okay, yeah, you're right. And then if I knew family was coming over, I would try to have that conversation ahead of time and say, hey, just a reminder, our dogs are in training. We're working really hard on a couple of things. And so what I really need you to help us with, or what I really need you to do, is no talk, no touch, no eye contact. And then monitoring that when that person is in your environment. And if things are straying,
check them.
Check early before things
snowball.
Yeah, before things snowball, right? That early correction of that individual, you know, and you can usually do it at a very low level than waiting for things to compound, and then it becomes much harder to
interrupt
that behavior.
Absolutely. The other thing is too, like this one I say all the time in training, if something's not working, change it. So if someone comes to your house often and it's really hard for them to ignore your dog at the door, because I feel like us staying on that topic, like that's such an issue for people. So if that's an issue, meet them out front, go for a walk.
I was just going to say, I was going to say, if you see somebody coming up to your door, like go meet them on your porch and be like, oh, hey, so-and-so, like, so glad you're here. Before we go inside, just quick reminder, just ignore the dog, right? And once the dog is calm, let it come to you. If you can get out in front of that behavior.
If you can predict it, you can prevent it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I know this is hard. I know this is uncomfortable. Being an advocate for your dog isn't always going to be easy, but it's going to be worth it.
Mm-hmm. If it was easy, everyone would have perfect dogs.
That's right. That's right. Where can you find this village? I mean, what have you done, Liz? Because again, you know, behavior-based training is still the minority, as you mentioned before. Not a lot of people understand it or fully are familiar with it. And so it might scare a lot of people. So where do you go for your village?
Something like Instagram. I use hashtags like pack leader, hashtag balance training, hashtag dog behavior. I use words like that so that if someone is looking for those things, they can find it. Same thing with Honest to Dog. Like I don't hide my philosophy and my approach. Like if you read my bios, if you read anything, I'm very upfront about like, I've worked with Cesar Millan. So you like that or you don't like that. Mm-hmm. I want you, if you like that, if you subscribe to dogs or pack animals who need leaders, I want to work with you. I don't want to have to convince anybody of anything. So go out there and search for your flock. If that's positive training only, or if that's balance training, or if that's someone who uses e-collar, or someone who definitely doesn't use prong collar, whatever it is and whatever it looks like to you, surround yourself with those people, find your flock, and then even if you have people in your life who are being like, I don't understand that. Why are you doing that? Or that's mean, or your dog looks depressed. You still have that network of people who do motivate you, who do hold you accountable, who do help you grow.
In that scenario, if somebody, you know, asks, you know, your dog is sad or your dog is depressed or whatever, you know, you've got options, right? You don't have to try to convince everybody that your way is the right way. I mean, that can be exhausting. And I know you've been there, right? When you're like, why don't more people just understand? But, you know, it's not our job to make everybody understand. You can choose to educate. You can choose to try to bring people into your way of thinking, but you don't have to feel responsible for that. You can also just be like, okay, that's fine. That person has that perspective on things. But if they're not going to at least respect your approach, then they maybe don't get to play a role or don't get to interact. Or, you know, it's the same thing. Like even when you're out walking your dog on the street and a person with a dog, you know, pulling on the end of the leash charges up to you, you've got choices. You can either say, okay, here's how I want our dogs to meet, loose leash, whatever, or, you know, my dog's in training. We're not going to say hi today, right? And standing up for your dog and being their advocate.
The way I see it is like, I'm sure there are friends out there that exist in the world where one's a huge carnivore and the other is vegan. They have very different beliefs in what they put in their body. But if they can respect each other's decisions and talk about other things, then they can be fine. Does that make...
It makes total sense.
You know
sense.
What I mean?
Yeah, like, 100%.
And what works for one person might not work for another one. Same thing with dogs. If someone was able to train their dog on an extended leash with a harness and lots of treats, cool, that worked for you and your dog. But maybe this other dog has way more intense issues, and so it might need a prong collar and an e-collar and someone who's calm assertive to lead it.
Yeah.
And respect those differences. Back to your question about how do you find a good community? It was a hard question for me to answer, truthfully, because one didn't really exist here in Waterloo that fit with what I subscribe to and believe in for dogs and dog owners and their culture. And so I had to create one, and it took time. It took work, but it's so worth it to have. And there are going to be people who come in and out of that community. They're going to be lifers, and there are going to be people who are seasonal, but I've made great friendships through that. I have been able to help my dogs. My dogs have made great friendships through that, and we've helped a lot of dogs. And so I do think if a trainer comes with a really great community, you know you are going to be successful.
Yeah.
Because the proof is in the other dogs in that community, but also the ongoing support and the real life situations, like of doing things together as a community, going out and doing walks, because you're going to get that ongoing training.
Yeah, I think it says something about the training if there is a strong and vibrant and thriving community that surrounds the trainer. And I we've seen both, right? We've seen people like Dogfit Dallas and LA Pack Life and Pack Leader Dogs. They all have these really, really strong communities that surround the trainer, the lead personality. And I think that that's actually to their credit, right? Because, you know, yes, what Steve and Art and Sam are doing is amazing, and they're incredible teachers and strong leaders and visionaries. But what they've been able to do is infect all these people around them with the same passion and energy and same skills, so that it's not reliant on just one person, right? If they went on vacation or decided to take a sabbatical or were out working with Caesar, that community could continue to give back to its members. And then we've seen the opposite, where certain training mentalities are so focused on the individual that if that individual wasn't present, the training couldn't continue because the community doesn't have the skills to support its members in that person's absence. So I think that's something you raise a really good point. Like if you're out looking for a trainer, you're out looking for a daycare, for a boarding facility, the best ones are going to be ones that have a following in a community and a village that surround it.
Mm-hmm. And those are great references, right? Talk to them about their experience.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, because these are people who are not on payroll. They're not my staff to ask them questions, right? About, hey, like, does this really work? They'll be like, yes.
You do it in so many other parts of your life, you'd ask, you know, do you have a few clients I could talk to? You know, if you're interviewing a new painter or a new general contractor for a job that you're doing at your house, you would ask for references. You'd ask to talk to past customers. Why not do the same thing with a dog trainer or a dog daycare or a groomer or, you know, a boarder, or even a vet, yeah, for goodness sakes?
I actually suggested it to a client who was on the fence about doing online training or not. And I was like, listen, I don't know when the next time in person is going to be able to happen. I understand you have a puppy. Things shouldn't wait really any longer than this. Why don't you talk to one of my clients who took the online group class? She can tell you, answer all your questions, and she's not selling, right? So I gave them, I asked if that was okay. She took their phone call. They texted me back so fast, being like, we're in. Right. And here's this person who is able to give them an insider look on being straight up too. It's a lot of work. You got to make lifestyle changes. But here are the good things. Liz has a community, ongoing support, going to daycare. Liz is an awesome teacher. You're going to love it.
It's so interesting. I mean, I want to ask you, you know, what are the things that you would ask? Like if you were having a smart conversation, you know, asking about, let's say we were to move to a new city and we were looking for a new daycare for our dogs, like what would be the things you'd want to ask? Because I know, like with me, even some of the online courses I'm taking for professional development these days, what I'm finding the most value in isn't just the course content. I mean, the course content is great, right? Whether it's the section 4 stuff I've taken or the grow class stuff I've taken, the course content is top notch, taught by top instructors. But what I find the most valuable, the most powerful, is the community that surrounds it. The fact that I can go to a group of people who I know share similar foundation in the course material and ask them for help, ask them questions, mm-hmm, and be inspired by those people.
They have applied the knowledge.
That's right.
They're living it. And so they can offer insight.
So what would you ask, you know, to kind of gauge the quality of the village or the community if you were seeking out a new trainer or a new daycare?
I guess part of it would be, how active is the community? How involved are they? Helpful in their feedback? Or is it constructive? Or is it, like we talked about before, all yes, yes, yes?
Or negative.
Or negative.
Yeah.
What I like with the community, if I'm being really real, is that it's abundant, right? So when someone does training with us or does daycare with us, joins our community, we don't withhold anything from them. It's like, I just learned this. I want to share it with you, right? I want to help you grow. I did this with my dogs. And like, we share these stories and these approaches and tips and tricks and tools, because the whole motivation is to help dogs be their best self. And it's not like, for an extra $200 subscription, you need to, you know what I mean? It's not a sell. It's just there, open and honestly. Like, I love, love, love when somebody in the community posts a question. I mean, we just use Facebook. We keep it like super real, and they'll post either a question or something they were successful at. And the outpouring of love and feedback that gets, or that's a great idea, now I'm going to try that. Like, it's just, it's really nice and encouraging.
I'd say it even goes beyond words of encouragement and words of affirmation and advice to actually physical giving. And what I mean by that is, I mean, obviously in the days that we're in right now where we can't get together, it's different, but I can think of times where people are like, hey, I need to go practice greetings, or I need to go practice.
Can someone come over and ring my doorbell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I've seen people be like, I'm looking to do a walk, you know, in this community because my dog has issues here. Is anyone willing to come with me? And it seems like immediately a bunch of hands shoot up. So it's people who are willing to not only give their advice, but give their time to, mm-hmm, help other people be successful.
And again, it's us wanting to be part of a social herd, right? Be a part of a village, have that support, survival. Because it's so much easier to overcome something with somebody else who can offer you support and feedback than trying to climb Mount Everest on your own.
Yeah. So I think, you know, just to kind of put a bow on this, what I've taken away from this is that it takes a village to raise your dog, that you can't be successful with training just on your own, or even just within your household. It's having people kind of in your orbit who are bought into the same beliefs, values, philosophy that you are, and activating that community to help you achieve your goals. Mm-hmm. Any other kind of like key insights to kind of pull it all together?
If you don't feel like you have much of a community, what's stopping you to go out and build your own? Maybe we need an honest to dog community.
I love that.
Maybe we get something rolling where people can chime in and share their successes with how they're applying the knowledge that they're learning, or like meeting up. Like, this is my whole dream for dog, honest to dog, is like, we're just like on vacation one day in like LA, I don't know, or New York. And
let's say LA. Yeah.
And we just announce that we're there with our dogs. We're feeling like we might want to do a little walk. All honest to dog listeners are welcome to join. And we have just like this huge pack walk.
I love it.
That's definitely when Corona is long gone.
All right. I've got some ideas for what we might be able to do even sooner than that. But let it simmer a little bit. If anyone has any thoughts on the honest to dog village, that's what we'll call it. Drop us a note in our DMs. We loved hearing from you. Thank you for all the feedback since last episode. We love nothing more than getting your comments, your ideas, your questions. So hit us up on Instagram at Honest to Dog Podcast.
And until next time, stay calm and assertive.
If you like what you heard, hit that subscribe button and leave us a comment or a review. We'd love to hear from you.
We release a new podcast weekly. Follow us on Instagram at Honest to Dog Podcast.
Honest to Dog Podcast is hosted by Liz Foley and Jeff Gadway. The show is engineered, edited, and produced by me, Timothy Musa. Support for the podcast is provided by The Doghouse. For all things training and daycare, head over to their website, doghaus.ca.